Today on Annenberg Radio News.
LA is like the worst place to find a job right now.
People do some jobs. Everything's so busy. Everything's always all about, you know, all business.
Angelenos are some of the country's most stressed out residents. We ask them why. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California, and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, November 11th, 2010. I'm LaTanya Kirkland. Americans pause today to honor its military veterans. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Admiral Michael Mullen, was in Los Angeles to pay tribute to veterans.
This is a mission service event, and there are many of those across the nation today on this very, very special day. So this happens at a time, obviously, we're in two wars. We've got tens of thousands of veterans who are returning home. This is the best military that I've ever been associated with in the over 40 years that I've been privileged to wear the uniform.
Mullen served as Grand Marshal of the Veterans Day Parade in the San Fernando Valley. Latinos make up about 11% of the U.S. Armed Forces, and there are slightly more women than men serving. Veterans Day events are taking place across the city today as they have in years past, but today was the first ceremony to honor women veterans from the Boyle Heights community. Caitlin Parker was there.
Families, students, and veterans from East L.A. gathered in Boyle Heights this morning to honor those from their community who have served in the U.S. military. The event was the first of its kind for the largely Latino community. Local leaders and politicians shared their voices of support for veterans at home and abroad, but the keynote speaker of the morning was Specialist Veronica Martinez. She served in Iraq from March of 2003 to November 2005. Even though she's back in her home state of California, she says her thoughts remain with her fellow servicemen and women.
I'm not only here today to honor all my veterans, but to honor all my women veterans. Not only have we put our lives on hold, but we have left our families and some their children behind to fight in foreign wars.
This was an emotional day for her, not only as a woman veteran, but also as a Latina.
In the last couple weeks, I have learned about my history, about my Hispanic heritage as a U.S. veteran. I am a new generation of Hispanic veterans that will not be discriminated or looked down upon because of the color of my skin or because of my features.
Right now, Martinez is on active reserve with the Army, pursuing a degree in business administration. Once she graduates, she would like to return to active duty as a second lieutenant. Caitlin Parker, Annenberg Radio News.
Mourners will gather tonight in Inglewood at the Simpson Mortuary for the viewing of the 5-year-old boy who was shot and killed Halloween Day. Aaron Shannon was shot in the head while showing off his Spider-Man costume to his family. Police say the shooting was gang-related, but the boy's family has no gang involvement. Two men were arrested last week and are being held in lieu of $4 million bail. Funeral services will be held tomorrow in Gardena. It's the holiday season, and you may be thinking about what ingredients you'll need for your gourmet feasts. But equal access to healthy food is a problem. Community groups are calling attention to this problem of access in areas like South LA. Albert Sabate has more.
The Alliance for Healthy and Responsible Grocery Stores gave grades to major grocers today, and it's not looking good for areas such as South Los Angeles, mostly because stores aren't there. Here's Elliot Petty, the director of the Alliance.
We are expressing that food desert communities are not being served well by the entire grocery industry.
Petty and others spoke about the report in front of Avon's in West LA. The Alliance graded the grocers from A to F. It looked at store and food quality, job quality, and most importantly, their presence in food deserts. Super A got a B-, and Smart and Final got a D+.
Avon's has virtually no stores in food desert communities. All the things that they do well, all that they provide for this neighborhood here, they do not provide in entire communities of Los Angeles.
One in three residents in South LA is obese. Compare that to West Los Angeles, where only one in 10 is obese. There are also far fewer grocery stores in South LA. It has one store for every 75,000 residents versus one for every 20,000 residents on the west side. Council member Paul Caretz said the status quo has to change.
This has to change, and it has to change now. those chains which are failing us. And we need all to know that.
The Alliance says it hopes a report will encourage grocery stores to provide healthy food options for areas like South Los Angeles. This is Albert Sabate, Annenberg Radio News.
You can find out more about the grades and the Alliance's report of food deserts on our website, annenbergradio.org. Food stamps were originally created to give low-income families some help at the grocery store checkout counter. Now these families have the option of using debit or EBT cards at local restaurants. As Haley Fox found, some Los Angeles residents are not happy about the change.
Many of the restaurants participating in this restaurant meals program are fast food chains like Pizza Hut and KFC. These menus don't offer the healthiest food in the world. Even the salads and vegetables are weighed down with high-calorie dressings or butter and oil. Eleanor from Baldwin Hills says she's upset her taxpayer dollars are being spent on fried food.
I don't think it should be used to buy the ready-made food because it's only lasting for one day or even just for that meal, whereas if you just go to the grocery store, you can prepare a whole meal.
The restaurant program was created to help people who may be unable to cook for themselves, like the homeless, disabled, and the elderly. This demographic often has a hard time buying and preparing their own meals, or even finding a kitchen to make it in. Dr. Donna Spruit-Metz, a research professor at USC, says that sometimes fast food is the only option.
What about parents who don't have time to cook? And what about the fact that sometimes there are no supermarkets available to them? Something really needs to be done about the food deserts that a lot of these people live in, where they really don't have access to anything healthy.
This is often an issue in South LA, where produce and fresh groceries aren't always easy to find. Joe Alamad, the owner of California Steak and Fries, says although he sells a lot of steak sandwiches, he tries to offer healthier options, like salads and smoothies. Since his restaurant started accepting EBT cards a year and a half ago, business has gone way up.
There's a lot of poor people in that area, and they need to use their food stamps, and we were available there to help them, and we did.
Farmers markets throughout the city have also started to accept EBT cards. The So Fresh Farmers Market in West Adams is every Sunday and brings fresh produce to a neighborhood that often goes without. Irene Wesley says that choices are key and that he's glad the restaurant program offers freedom and flexibility.
The EBT is no different than a debit card, except the people who have it don't put money on it.
There were over 2.5 million people using the EBT system in California last year. This number is constantly growing, and Texas is the only other state in the country that has more people on food stamps than California. This is Haley Fox, Annenberg Radio News.
Tonight will be cool with a low of 50 degrees. Tomorrow we'll have warm, sunny weather with a high of 74. And this weekend we'll heat back up with temperatures in the high 70s. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I speak with NPR host Michelle Norris about her memoir, The Grace of Silence. It's now going to cost more to attend a California State University. Tuition is going up 3 times what it was 10 years ago, to almost $5,000 a year. Chris Foy has more on what higher education's higher price tag means.
The Cal State University's Board of Trustees voted Wednesday in favor of increasing the cost of tuition for CSU students. The board voted in support of a 5% hike in fees starting this January and a 10% raise in costs by next fall that they say is needed to keep classes running and student services functional. CSU students will have to fork over an extra $105 this academic year and an extra $444 in the fall of 2011. Ruben Vasquez, senior aerospace engineering student at Cal Poly Pomona, helped organize a protest outside of the meeting of the board in Long Beach on Wednesday.
You know, mainly the board trustees say that when making that comparison that the CSU is one of the most affordable institutions for higher education, it's becoming less affordable as time goes on, you know, because of the trends with the fee increases, whether it's 10%, 15%, or like last year, they increased the fees by 32%. Is a really a big deal, whether it's $400 now or $1,000 later, more that we might have to pay depending on how things go.
President of the University of California proposed on Monday increasing tuition by 8% in an open letter to the state. publicly funded colleges across the state have been hiking up their price tag, and Vasquez says this means those looking to state-funded institutions for an affordable education might find them out of reach without financial aid.
These are students that couldn't probably afford to go to any other school other than the CSU because it was so affordable at the time. But, you know, what we're seeing now with these fee increases is that, you know, they've been happening every year for the past 8 years.
The Board of Trustees requested the state to buy out the proposed tuition hike. If the governor in Sacramento approves it, the tuition hikes would be taken back down. Chris Foy, Annenberg Radio News.
Life in Los Angeles may not be as easy and breezy as we all thought. You've probably heard about the study that shows people in Los Angeles are more stressed than those in New York and Detroit. 29% of the people in LA metro area reported having a great deal of stress, compared to 24% nationally. Kyle Tabuena Froley hit the streets and asked them, why so stressed?
SoCal, I think when people think of SoCal, they think of like the surfers and the beaches and the sun and relaxing, but really once you get into the metro areas, like
a lot of it is just the busy, on-the-go, everyday type of thing, you know.
It becomes a cluster pot, it's just frustration.
And that's what really like gets them so like frustrated all the time.
The city's like a lot bigger.
It's definitely a lot busier city, so you feel the stress.
A lack of structure in terms of our freeways, transportation.
Traffic. Traffic's really bad. Everything's so crowded.
It makes it more frustrating to get around, to navigate, to visit family members, to get to work.
It's pretty bad. It probably takes me about close to an hour to get here.
To get home in time to take care of your kids, you know.
And I'm not even that far Orange County. I'm kind of on the border Orange County, Long Beach. It just gets to you after a while, you know.
I think they're just really stressed because LA is like the worst place to find a job right now.
People losing jobs.
Everything's so busy. Everything's always all about, you know, business, all business, all the time.
We're having hopes to come to USC and in the end we're not even going to make it.
They have to keep up this certain image and have this network.
Are we going to get the scholarship or are we just wasting our time?
And it's really competitive.
So it's like every day we wake up thinking like, oh, are we going to make it another day?
Oh, and it's getting hotter.
And it's a lot
like this
hotter
weather
than
is
been.
Crazy. We're all going to like die in a fiery explosion.
I'm serious.
That report was from Kyle Tabuena Froley.
California, here I come, right back where I started from, where bowers the flowers bloom.
Los Angeles has 20,000 homeless veterans, the largest population in the country. With the VA already overwhelmed by veterans from previous wars, New Directions is one of the organizations filling the gap in service for new homeless vets returning from Iraq and Afghanistan. Emily Frost investigated the challenges these new vets face.
Ed Gonzalez heads New Directions program to help newly returned vets from Iraq and Afghanistan establish normal lives, get jobs, or find a place to live. These new veterans have a distinct set of issues. Sometimes it seems it's the mundane things that can trip you up.
While in Iraq, you know, you don't stop for anybody or anything. If a car's in front of you, you bump it, it doesn't move, then, you know, many times you had to open fire. In the beginning of the war, they were using both pedestrians and vehicles to slow convoys down in order to attack them.
Back in the U.S., faced with parking lot-like freeways, some veterans panic.
All of a sudden, they may get a flashback, a memory of, you know, a combat situation. They're hitting the gas, bumping cars. All of a sudden, you're being arrested.
And with medical advances, more veterans survive traumatic brain injury. Some have lost their short-term memory and can't hold down a job. For Gonzalez, helping veterans means better educating the public.
You take a young man who has been under, you know, the care of mom and dad. Everything was pretty much told to you. Graduate from high school, they go into the military. Now you have a surrogate parent called the U.S. government. Everything is set coming out of the military after they did their 3 or 4 years of service to the country. Now you got to make all the decisions on your own.
Gonzalez emphasizes that these problems aren't universal, but still many returned service members are coping with these stresses with drugs and alcohol, avoiding flashbacks and nightmares by passing out or never going to sleep. The root of the problem comes back to stigma. Veterans have to know that it's okay to ask for help. Their inpatient facility, where veterans can stay and start the process of getting clean and getting help, is open 24 hours a day and welcomes vets from all over the country. For Annenberg Radio News, I'm Emily Frost.
NPR host Michelle Norris will be at Esawen Books in Leimert Park tonight, reading from her new memoir, The Grace of Silence. The book traverses Norris's childhood home in Minneapolis to her familial roots in the South to uncover her own family's hidden conversation about race. This week, we spoke about the process in creating the book and the lessons she learned during that process. You ventured to write this book about other people and the conversation about race in America. What caused you to change course and write about your own family?
Well, I started listening to this hidden conversation about race around the country because I wanted to capture it and write about it. And when I sort of set the frequency to listen to that conversation, I started picking up bits and pieces of it in my own family. And I realized that the older people in my family were talking about things that they'd never spoken of before. And I realized, as interested I was in that other book where I was listening to other people and examining how they talk and think about race, that the story that I really had to pursue was my own family's history.
You know, as a journalist who's normally telling other people's stories, what was it like to switch roles and talk about your own family experience?
Oh, it was incredibly difficult and vertigo-producing. I mean, I'm used to being on the sidelines, and I'm not used to being part of the story, and I couldn't stay on the sidelines in this case. I had to get into the story. I had to speak honestly about not just what I was discovering, but about what it meant to me.
And you found that both of your parents kept things from you regarding their own experience around race, and that's what you call the grace of silence. Why do you think they chose to keep some of those things from you?
They moved on. They decided not to dwell on indignities or painful aspects of their past. But I now understand something else, that they were trying to create a narrative for their lives that was about ambition and success and getting to a better place. But they also did not want to burden the next generation. And that is where the grace comes in. Because it would have been so easy for them to wallow in complaint or frustration or feed my generation, feed their kids, a steady diet of regret and woe and complaint. And they didn't do that.
And, you know, you have your own children now. So how, as a parent, do you negotiate your own grace of silence?
Well, I grew up in a family with lots of secrets, and I just made those secrets public by writing a book about it. So my children will know about the things that I never knew when I was growing up. But I will try to not just put the information out there and let it sit. I'll talk it through with them. I want them to take away from this a strong sense of perseverance and to know that, you know, bad things happen in life, but that doesn't have to define you. But I hope the main lesson they take from this is that they come from strong people.
Great. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
That was Michelle Norris, NPR host and author of The Grace of Silence. Here's an anniversary that deserves to be in the lights. This week marks the 100th birthday of neon signs. The neon sign was patented in 1910. 13 years later, the first neon sign appeared in downtown Los Angeles advertising cars. Museum of Neon Art director Kim Koga says that led to another Los Angeles first.
People just didn't know what they were looking at. They went crazy, and everybody had to come over and take a look at it, and everybody drove over, and it caused maybe LA's first traffic jam right there at Hope and Olympic. So it was really a sight to behold.
Today, both neon lights and traffic jams are a fixture in LA, but you can still see a replica of that first sign in its original location. Now we check in with Marie Agnello to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Thanks. I'm Marie Agnello, executive producer of Annenberg TV News. Be sure to tune in tonight and join us. We have an ATVN exclusive interview with the band manager of the band that was playing at the Roxy last night, just before there was a deadly hit-and-run accident. So hear from the manager of that band on the commotion and what happened outside of the Roxy just moments after Lauren Freeman was hit by a Bentley and passed away last night. Also, join us for more information from passengers of the Carnival cruise ship, the Carnival Splendor, as it docked in Los Angeles today.
Great. Thank you, Marie. That's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Julia Gabrick, Laurel Galanter, Benjamin Capino, Stephanie Kaiser, Rachel Lee, and Ryan Nunez. Thanks also to Annenberg TV News. Ariel Edwards-Levy is our producer. The executive producer is Jessica Flores. For all of us at Annenberg Radio News, I'm LaTanya Kirkland.